you. Thank you very much. Hello. Thank you. If the dead could speak, what would they say? Some think they'd say, ah, help, I'm trapped in a box underground. Get me out. Where have all my skin and internal organs gone? Ah, my jaw has just fallen off now. This is humiliating. Others contend that they would say, I'm looking for someone whose name begins with J. No, wait, it's L. I died from something involving one of the organs in my chest. Or was it the head? I'm not sure. And obviously, having died, I have access to the answers to some of the greatest philosophical questions that have ever troubled mankind. But I'd prefer just to vaguely confirm some information you already know and then say I'm happy now. Bye! Here at That Was Then, This Is Now, we believe that the dead can't speak. But the demographic of the Radio 2 audience suggests that they can listen. And also write in letters of complaint. So especially for them, we put together a 27-minute long sketch show about almost five of the things that happened this week in history. But don't worry, you don't have to be dead to enjoy this show. But it helps. We still got something here for those of you who are living and breathing and have blood pumping through your organs. It's our rock and roll band, Christian Riley and the Rosetta Stones. Hey, Christo, that was great. How's it hanging?
It's hanging quite well, thank you.
Good.
So, Rich, at the end of last week's show, Evil Knievel and his twin brother Good Knievel were embroiled in the ultimate apocalyptic battle that would determine whether good or evil would now rule the world.
Nice recap.
Thank you. What happened?
Well, didn't you stay to watch?
Well, no, because a few of the girls in the audience were going out for a pizza and then they were going to go to the cinema and see White Chicks.
Well, you gave up witnessing the end of the world as we know it to go and see White Chicks.
It was a good film.
Well, how was the pizza?
Great.
Well, I wish I'd come now.
You weren't invited. So anyway, which Knievel won?
I don't know either, really. I really had to go to the toilet.
Rich.
I was busting. Hopefully one of the Time Gang from History Corner will know who won the Knievel showdown. Please welcome my old history teacher from school, Mr. Morgan, and West London egghead, Brian O'Green.
Thank you very much. Hello.
Live long and prosper. Yeah,
so, Mr. Morgan, tell me, were you here for the final showdown?
Yes, I was here, Richard.
Oh,
yes.
Thank goodness for that.
But I don't know if you noticed, I was drinking heavily through the last show to try and numb the pain of losing my job and my wife. Hello, Hillary, if you're listening. And I fell into a drunken stupor and missed the denouement. Sorry. Do you want some brandy, by the way?
A bit early for me, thanks, Mr. Start. Morgan. Brian, you must have stayed to watch.
I did, Richard, and I know who won.
Oh, great. Who was it, good or evil?
No, Richard, I'm not going to reveal that. There are a lot of people waiting for the DVD release of the fight between good and evil. I don't want to spoil the ending for them. I knew what happened in the last episode of Star Trek Next Generation for months and never told anyone.
Well, this is a bit different to that. So, no result on whether we're being ruled by good or evil. Maybe at home you can have a look out your window and see if the sun is shining or it's raining sulphur and the dead have risen from their graves. Might be the best indication. So, what stories have you spotted from history this week, guys?
Well, on the 25th of October 1854, the Charge of the Light Brigade, one of the greatest military blunders in history. Lions led by donkeys.
Yeah, if only there was some parallel we could make between that and something happening in the news today.
Yeah.
We could look like brilliant Rory Bremner's style satirists.
Yes,
yeah.
Can't really think of anything.
No, me neither.
No. Oh! No,
never mind. No, you have to be a genius like that bloke off of Dead Ringers who does the Russell Crowe impression to think of satire about something. It's to be able to take two events and just compare them somehow. You have to be a genius.
I can't do it. Of course, the Battle of Balaclava was immortalised in one of my favourite poems, The Charge of the Light Brigade by Lord Alfred Tennyson. Yeah. Into the Valley of Death rode the 600.
Do you know any of the rest of it?
No.
Favourite poems then, is it?
Oh, no, hang on. Yes, no. Cannons, yes, to the left of them. Jokers to the right. No, that's something else. No, sorry.
No, okay, never mind. You can't blame Lord Cardigan for killing all those men. He had a tough choice to make.
Right, men, I think it's time we did an attack. As I see, we have a choice. We could head into the Valley of Death. That's the Valley of Death. Or, alternatively, we could go down this valley, a valley which is called, let me check on the map here, yes, the Valley of Life. sometimes known as the Valley of Staying Alive. So, not much to choose between them. What intelligence have we got?
Well, the Valley of Death, has cannon to the right of it.
Right, cannon, yes.
Cannon to the left.
More cannon, yes.
Cannon in front.
Mainly cannon.
And then, at the end, the mouth of hell.
And which valley is that again?
That's Death.
Death, right. I'll make a note of that. Death. Mainly cannon and hell. Okay, and what about the Valley of, what was it again?
Life.
Life, yes.
The Valley of Life has some flowers on the left of it.
Flowers, yes.
Two rabbits and a fawn.
Fawn slash rabbit, yes.
Nice cafe at the front.
Oh, lovely, lovely.
And at the end, there are some girls who look like they will definitely put out.
And that's the Valley of Death?
No, of Life.
Of Life, yes. Sorry, that's what I meant, yes. What is a tough call, isn't it? Yes.
Can I suggest Life?
The cannon one?
No, that's Death.
Oh, yes. Well, they're both good, aren't they? I don't see how we can choose, really. Should we toss a coin?
Whatever you say, sir.
Okay, heads for Death, tails, the one with the cannon.
But was there more to the Crimean War than meets the eye? It's time for the section to show the kids are calling... Conspiracy Theory Corner.
What kids are calling? There aren't any. No, it says Radio 2. Kids don't listen to this show.
So, Richard, what was the Crimean War really about?
Well, the immediate cause was the Franco-Russian dispute over the holy places in Palestine.
Ha! You blind fool. That's what the government wants you to think. A government, I should add, that is truly made up of giant, blood-drinking otters from outer space. But that's for another time. The sinister truth is that the Crimean War was really a war fought over wool. Wool? I think you hear me knocking. I think I'm entering your house carrying a box marked unassailable fact. Richard, do you know how many sheep there are on an average acre of the Crimea?
Is it none?
Today, on average, it is none, correct. But in 1854, there were as many as 8.5 individual sheep per acre. Fact. 8.5 wool-provided sheep providing wool for the international wool market.
The wool? Who cares about that?
Who led the charge of the Light Brigade, Richard?
It was Lord...
That was a rhetorical question. A rhetorical question I will now answer non-rhetorically. It was none other than Lord Cardigan, inventor of the cardigan, an item of clothing made traditionally of...
Sorry, is that a rhetorical question?
No, you can answer that one.
Nylon?
No, it was wool, the wool of sheep. Cardigan saw the trouble in the Crimea as an opportunity to advertise his new range of front-buttoning woolen fashion garments. And a new item he had just invented. The Holy Grail, or should that be Woolly Grail? A helmet made entirely of wool.
The balaclava helmets.
We're cooking on gas. A helmet that made Cardigan millions but provided absolutely no protection from being hit on the head by a cannonball. Check this. 90% of the horses in the battle were made from wool. Fact.
Where's this going, Brian?
All these injured wool-covered soldiers, Richard. Who was responsible for looking after them? None other than Florence Nightingale, or Flono, as she was known. The wool thing was just a front for her own business, selling novelty lamps.
And so Cardigan's involvement?
The charge of the Light Brigade, Richard. Haven't you seen it? The horses were weighed down by giant inflatable novelty lamps with Florence Nightingale's big face on them. They didn't stand a chance. QED, over and out. Can I get a high five?
No, you can't. It's no, because now it is time for a song from Christian Riley and the Rosetta Stones.
Thanks a lot. This week in 1978, Air Force Sergeant Leonard Matlevich was discharged after declaring his homosexuality on the cover of Time magazine. His tombstone reads, "A gay Vietnam veteran. When I was in the military, they gave me a medal for killing two men and a discharge for loving one." Times have changed since those dark days, but gay personnel in the military are still discriminated against. It seems there's no stigma attached to being a gay man, but sadly there's still a stigma attached to being a gay man that kills people. It's because there haven't been enough gay killers' pride marches and gay killers' pride anthems. So here's one.
1, 2, 3, 4. Let's get this right out of the way. I'm a military man and I'm gay. I'm coming out of the bunker today. I heard all your jokes about dishonorable discharges. I'm brushing up against the men at the parade ground marches. But history ain't gonna remember me that way. Cause I killed two men and I'll say it loud. I killed two men and I'll say it proud. Well, I'm attracted to members of my own sex. Yeah, I killed two men and don't you forget it. I killed two you don't stop calling me a sissy, you might be next. Well, I never liked Barbra Streisand and musical theater sickens me, too. Just put a gun in my hand, mister, I got me some killing to do. Now, don't you judge me on whether I'm gay or straight, or the two dead bodies lying in my way. I'm gay and I'm a killer, get used to it. Oh, you are so dead.
Christian Riley and the Rosetta Stones. Now it's time to take a look at this week's birth, deaths and marriages with TV's Emma Kennedy.
It's time to find out who got wet bread or dead with TV's Emma Kennedy.
Hello, I'm TV's Emma Kennedy. You know me. I played the shop assistant on those Sainsbury's ads with John Cleese, which regularly tops the polls of worst advertising campaign ever. Get in! But what am I doing? This isn't my audio CV. So let's take a gander at what's going on this week in the worlds of grooms, tombs, a hand, bountiful wombs. Blowing out the candles of joy this week is 59-year-old Henry Winkler, most famous for his portrayal of the Fonz, a character who redefined cool, redefining it to mean a 35-year-old man who spends all his time hanging around with nerdy teenagers and who has an office in a toilet. But stop all the clocks and don your widow's weeds, because this week has been just rubbish for those who died. 24th October, 1537. Jane Seymour dies in childbirth, ruining plans for the already green-lighted seventh series of Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. But wipe the mucus of despair from your nostrils and raise your hands to the heavens, for this week also saw great joy for those who got married. The 27th October, 1964, was a day of wedded bliss for Sonny Bono and his sinning partner, Cher. Years later, Sonny was sadly killed after skiing into a Douglas fir. Still, at least he didn't fall off a chair lift.
No, Emma, sorry. Not only is that joke quite offensive, it really doesn't work on so many levels. It's hard to know where to start.
No, it doesn't. It's good.
Well, what does it mean, a chair lift?
You know, a chair lift, it's like chair lift, you know, like on skiing holidays.
Well, which is it, chair lift or share lift?
Share lift.
Share lift. What is that? A chairlift where instead of having a chair, you're seated on the popular singer Cher, who's suspended from a wire and used to transport skiers up the mountainside?
Yes.
Yes? Wouldn't that be prohibitively expensive? Hiring Cher to act as a seat. She commands a fee of thousands of dollars an hour. It would also be quite inefficient. I'd imagine Cher would only be strong enough to carry, what, one, maybe two small skiers at a time.
She does work out.
People will be queuing at the bottom of the hill, waiting for Cher to get all the way up to the hill, drop off that person, come back again, pick them up. It would take hours with just one Cher on this Cher lift.
Yeah, but there'd be more than one Cher. I mean, the other Chers would be Cher lookalikes, I mean, some of whom would be transvestite gay men who could carry two, possibly three skiers.
Oh, sorry, I didn't understand. It's a Cher lookalike lift now, is it? It was a Cher lift a minute ago.
Yeah, no, it's a Cher and Cher lookalike lift, a Cher and Cher alike lift.
All right, that makes more sense. But how would falling off a Cher and Cher alike lift be worse than skiing into a tree, which is a horrible way to die?
I don't know.
Sonny Bono is dead, Kennedy. He is dead.
Yeah,
have some respect.
I'm sorry.
Get back to the land of whorish television where you belong, you mawkish witch.
I'm not mawkish.
You are, Kennedy. You're as mawkish as Boris Johnson wrongly imagines the emotionally stable people of Liverpool to be. You're that mawkish.
He wrongly imagines they are very mawkish.
I know. He's wrong about them. If only he'd said it about you, he'd have been lauded as an heroic man of wisdom and truth. But no, he messed up. Leave now. Never darken these doors again.
Till next week's show.
Yeah, same time as usual.
All right.
Bye.
That was then, this is now. History is more or less punk.
What What's up next, Brian?
Well, on 24th October 1931, the American authorities finally caught up with legendary mobster Al Capone when he was sentenced to 11 years in prison for tax evasion.
Tax evasion? Well, that really puts Big Al up there with the greats of organised crime, like Lester Piggott. So how did the great mobster and Robert De Niro look-alike end up getting arrested for such a girly crime?
There he is, boys. Al Capone, the most notorious tax evader in American history. Get him!
Hey, what's going on, you schmucks? You looking for a one-way ticket to Palookaville? Whatever that may or may not mean.
Alphonsus Capone, I, Elliot Ness, off of The Untouchables, do hereby arrest you for tax evasion.
No. You can't arrest me for tax evasion. It'll ruin my reputation. You know, I murder people. You know, I'm the guy who organized the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Why don't you arrest me for that, huh?
No, I am Elliot Ness, and I am untouchable. Not in a Hindu lower caste way, but in a non-bribable, above-intimidation sort of way. You can't influence me.
But I'm confessing the murders here. You know, really grisly ones. Lots of them.
Forget that. I have concrete evidence that several of your income tax forms have mistakes on them. One even had a smudge where your pen had leaked. You maniac.
Okay, hang on a minute. Jimmy?
Yeah, boss?
Ow! There, look. I just killed someone in front of you. Now will you arrest me for murder?
Don't think you can get off that easily. Cuff him, boys. You've got some serious tax forms to fill in, Mr. Capone. And according to our records, your house doesn't have a TV license.
The 27th of October, 1867, saw Garibaldi march on Rome. Garibaldi successfully united Italy, but notoriously spent the rest of his life feeling his achievement had not been appreciated. But why? Let's find out in a section of the show I like to call What Really Happened.
That was then, this is now.
What really happened?
Garibaldi, what can I say? You've pretty much single-handedly united the whole of Italy and made me, Victor Emmanuel II, the king of all of it. It's really a brilliant thing you've done, and I can't really thank you enough.
I ask for no reward. It is compensation enough simply to serve you and my country.
Well, that's super. But obviously, we aren't going to leave it at that. In honour of your bravery, I, Victor Emmanuel II... I'm going to name a biscuit after you.
A biscuit?
Yeah. It's exciting, isn't it?
Is this some kind of a joke? I risked my life and the lives of my men, and all I get in return is a frickin' biscuit.
No. You misunderstand. You don't actually get the biscuit. It just gets named after you. If you want to eat the actual biscuit, obviously, you'll have to buy it, like everyone else. But the biscuit will carry your name. Forever.
Well, sorry, Your Majesty, if I don't kneel down and kiss your ring, but I just thought that maybe for uniting Italy I might get some gold or a medal or some massive tract of land, not just a biscuit. And if I was going to do it for a biscuit, I'd expect to actually get a biscuit. Actually, probably a lifetime supply of biscuits. Or at least a money off voucher system allowing me to buy the biscuits at cost price. Not just the biscuit being named after me.
Most people would love to have a biscuit named after them. I know the Bourbons were delighted.
Well, they would be, because they never did anything, did they? I blooming united Italy, all of it, and I want more than a biscuit.
Well, to be honest, I'm a little bit hurt about your attitude about this. I wanted to do something really special and original that I'd chosen myself to show how much I thought about it. Not just give you the money or a gift token. And I was really pleased with a biscuit named after you idea. I thought you'd love it.
No, all right. Don't cry, Victor Emmanuel II. I'm sorry, no, it was a really nice idea, the biscuit thing. I really like it.
You're just saying that. You obviously don't like it. You've made that very clear.
No, I do like it. It just wasn't what I was expecting. And, you know, in the heat of the moment, I overreacted. Now, maybe if I could see the biscuit, then I might appreciate it a bit more.
Really?
Yeah, no, I promise.
OK. It's under this cloth.
That's it. That's the Garibaldi.
Yeah. It's a slightly soft flat rectangular biscuit with embedded currants. Do you like it?
You're taking the proverbial now, mate. That is the crappiest biscuit I've ever seen. After all I'd done, I'd expected a gigantic biscuit the size of a man's face, covered in caramel and chocolate with double chocolate chips and nuts and stuff in it, and marshmallows and maybe a little secret drawer with some ice cream in it. Not this currant thing. I wouldn't give that to my grandma. She'll eat any biscuit. She eats Nice biscuits. They're rubbish.
Listen, pal. I think you're getting a bit above yourself. You've only united Italy.
You can stick that biscuit up your arse, mate. I don't want it named after
well,
me.
Well, bad luck, because I'm naming it after
well,
you.
Well, bad luck, because I'm going to go out and disunify Italy now.
Well, good luck. I hope that you do.
I do too. And that's what really happened.
That was then, this is now, don't worry. We're just twittering about.
Brian, have you got anything else for us?
Yes, I have. On 26th October 899 AD, King Alfred the Great died.
King Alfred the Great. What was so great about King Alfred the Great? All he did in his life, the only thing, was burn some cakes. What's great about that? King Alfred the incompetent chef would be close to the point. Burn cake boy. That's all he was.
That's hardly fair, Richard. King Alfred the Great united all of England, built the first effective English navy, propagated learning, and introduced a legal system. In fact, most historians concur that the cake burning story is almost certainly apocryphal.
All he did was burn some cakes. All he had to do was take them out of the oven. But no, that was too much for old Cake Burno, wasn't it? For Alfred the Cake Burner, for Bernie Cakelstone. We have a twittutin. Exclusive for you this week. The tomb of King Alfred was recently discovered by archaeologists in Somerset, but the inevitable stories have been emerging from the dig about a mysterious curse that's befallen everyone who's come into contact with the kingly Skellington. So to find if that's true, please welcome the president of the British Archaeological Society, the cursed Susan Molyneux.
Hello.
So, Susan, you're cursed?
Yes, that's right. Everyone who's touched the bones of King Alfred has been afflicted.
So, you look all right. What happened to you? Was your soul ripped out of your bosoms and used to reanimate the cake-burning king?
Oh, dear. We get this a lot. Hollywood has got a lot to answer for with its sensationalising of tomb curses. In real life, Richard, curses resulting in violent death or reanimation of corpses are very rare. The truth is generally much more mundane.
No, I think you'll find everyone knows that when you open a tomb, you get infected with devil's spore and then have your face eaten off by scarabs.
Oh, if I had 10 pence for every time someone had said that to me, Brian, I'd have 37 pence.
So, well, how has the curse of King Alfred affected you?
Well, my curse manifests itself as a dry patch of skin around my left elbow, which flares up about twice a week. It's treated quite easily, actually, with hydrocortisone cream. It's very manageable. But before I touched the King Alfred Skellington, my elbow was as moist as yours.
A dry elbow, is that all it happened? Were none of the diggers desiccated by a scorpion king made of soot?
No, Simon Norman got really bad hiccups that lasted for, 20 minutes at least. We hit him on the back, made him drink water. Ian tried to scare him by waving the skeleton around, but, you know, nothing. It just meant that Ian got afflicted by the curse.
Oh, did he have his eyes and tongue stolen by Imhotep?
No, Brian. No, not on this particular dig. But on a shopping expedition just 3 weeks after the incident, Ian was narrowly beaten into no less than 2 parking spaces by other drivers. It was spooky. All thanks to the curse of King Alfred.
To be honest, Susan, I think your claims for a King Alfred curse are on slightly thin ice.
Well, are you prepared to put your scepticism to the test, Richard? I've brought the King Alfred Skellington with me today. It's in this carrier bag.
Isn't that a bit unprofessional?
Don't change the subject. Dare you touch my cursed Skellington?
What, and risk getting an occasionally dry elbow? Yeah, I think I dare do that. Here we go. There. Nothing's happened, nothing at all. Ooh, what's that?
Who disturbs my royal sleep?
King Alfred?
There's no need to swear.
I wasn't. I'm sorry.
Did I not give you people enough warning? Were the curses of the occasionally dry elbow, the hiccups, and the difficulty parking not enough for you people?
I thought it was just a coincidence.
Do I have to spell it out?
Sorry, I should have realised, but I've learnt now. It's okay.
There's clearly only one way to teach you. I shall send an acid wind to consume your flesh.
An acid wind? The other bloke got hiccups. That's not fair.
Talk to the hand. It's not my problem. Here goes.
My skin and flesh. Ow. Oh, that hurts. Oh, smart. Oh, well, seeing as I'm now just a skeleton clad in muscle like one of those models from biology lessons at school, I better go and have a lie down. Oh, God, now my jaw's fallen off. This is just humiliating. Hopefully I'll be better by next week, otherwise I'll be presenting this show from the other side. So until then, that was then, this is now. Good afternoon.
That was then, this is now was written by and starred Richard Herring, Emma Kennedy, Danny Robbins, Dan Tetzel, Christian Riley and the Rosetta Stones, who were Damien Caldwell, Charlie Round Turner and Martin Kane, with additional material by Mark Dady, Toby Davidson, Chris Powell, Richard Walton, Colin Birch and Nice Mum. The broadcast assistant was Trudy Stevens and the producer was Liz Anstey. That was then, this is now is a Cellador production for BBC Radio 2.